Hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me as the other half of the Future Sox contingent, I have James Fox with me. Also today, we are lucky enough to have senior writer for MLB Pipeline and MLB.com, Jim Kellis. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Great, Ian. Thanks, man.
Absolutely.
We're as we record this, we're what, 5 days away from opening day? Does that sound right?
Yeah, like it's close, and we have no idea who's going to be on the White Sox, so I'm glad we're talking prospects instead.
And we know because, like, the season's starting. It means what? It's going to be 70 degrees up here on Thursday, right? It has to be. Like, we wish. Mm-hmm. I just got done walking my dogs. I think it was 33 degrees outside as I walked them around. So,
yeah.
Five days
and 20 players away.
Yeah.
So big news here in Chicago as of recent. Obviously everybody has, it's been a national story. The Dylan Cease trade. What did you think about the Dylan Cease trade return? And do you have a scouting report on the return?
Yeah, I do. And I'll throw the question back at you for a second. You guys are more invested personally in the White Sox. I'm a neutral observer of all 30 teams. What did you guys think of the Dylan Cease trade? Were you expecting more or less? What did you think?
So, I can answer. Like, I would say that we were both pretty positive. I think it just depends on what you think of Drew Thorpe, Jim. We went live that night at like 9. We had a lot of people really worried about the fastball velocity and just like, oh, this guy's been traded twice and all that kind of stuff. And, I know Ian was a big fan of Drew Thorpe. He tried to, make it so the natives weren't as restless that night. And, I think the rest of the return, like, I was more excited about the other two pieces, but I think it does kind of hinge on what you think Thorpe can be probably.
Yeah, I thought it was a fair return. I thought it was a good return. I do think, one, we both know, like, the natives don't want to hear about any more prospects. Like, they could literally trade Dylan Cease for, like, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Freddie Freeman. And the fans would be like, we don't want to hear about any more trades. Like they're going to be upset. So there's that aspect. And I think with all prospects, unless you're talking about the super elite Jackson Holliday, Jackson Chourio types at the top, the very top of the top 100, there's always variance in how good these guys can be. They aren't, can't miss. And so you can look at it glass half full, glass half empty on all these guys if you want. I thought it was a good return. Drew Thorpe, I'm with you, Ian. I like Drew Thorpe. And it's funny, and I even fall prey to this sometimes as a prospect writer. Like you talk to scouts, and everybody's like, oh, it's not all velocity. It's not all fastball velocity. And then you look at who's going at the top of the draft, the guys who throw the hardest. Like everybody focuses on fastball velocity. And I would worry more about the fastball if the rest of the package wasn't what the rest of the package is. Like, it's 91 to 95 usually, but he commands it really well. And there's a difference between having 91 to 95 with average command and 91 to 95 with plus command. And we're talking command, not control. Like, he can put the fastball where he wants. And because of that, it plays better than your typical. I mean, that's like probably 40, 45 velocity, depending on how you want to grade it. The changeup's one of the best changeups in the minor leagues. The strike throwing is right up there with anybody on the top 100 prospect list. The slider, a slider is, it's not a plus pitch, but I'd say it's a solid pitch. It might be a tick above average characteristic wise, but again, he lands a slider. So, I mean, this is a guy whose stuff plays up because he puts it where he wants. Now, you always want to see those guys. Okay, it worked in high A, it worked in double A. Let's see it in triple A in the majors. But this guy was in demand. I've been asked like a bunch of times. You guys didn't ask me specifically, but the whole, he's been traded twice. So like, are the Yankees and Padres getting rid of him? No. Look at who he got traded for. The whole reason the Padres traded Juan Soto, I don't necessarily agree that made them a better team, but they were in a payroll bind. They don't have the payroll they did last year. All their pitching, their whole pitching staff left. So they basically needed to build almost a whole new rotation, and there was no way they could go out. They couldn't add payroll. So they free payroll by trading Soto for cheaper guys, Michael King, Drew Thorpe, Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez. I'm not saying that's all of them were giving me the rotation. So they traded for Drew Thorpe because they wanted Drew Thorpe. But then, A.J. Preller is the biggest wheeler and dealer, him and probably Jerry DePoto with Mariners. And I know the Padres' attitude is, to boil it down, there's always another international class. There's always another draft. So we can always trade prospects because we'll just get more. They have, like, in a good way, the arrogance, like, we're good scouts. We're just going to go out and crush the draft again. So it wasn't that they wanted to trade Drew Thorpe, but they could get Dylan Cease. And it's like, yeah, and, you know, Dylan Cease is still very affordable for them. He's not making free agent money. So I'm on board with Drew Thorpe. And the whole – and I've been asked that a bunch by various radio stations, whatever, like, oh, he's been traded twice. Yes, because everybody wants Drew Thorpe. It's not, hey, we need to trade this guy before everybody realizes, you know, he turns into a pumpkin at midnight. So I'm on board with Drew Thorpe. You know, he's not, you know, he's the floor stands out more than the ceiling, and those guys always tend to underwhelm fans. But I think I'd be very shocked if he isn't an effective number four or five starter. You know, maybe he doesn't want to be more than that. But, like, I think he's got a chance to be a three. But I think you have very good certainty with Drew Thorpe. And probably the thing the organization is missing more than anything is upper-level pitchers who are polished. You have him, you have Jonathan Cannon, who hasn't even really pitched that much in Double-A. Who's the next guy? I don't know. They don't have upper-level pitchers who are polished. So anyway, I like Drew Thorpe. And the other two guys are super exciting too. You know, you can glass half full, glass half empty them. Samuel Zavala, super young. Padres pushed him real aggressively. Hits for average. He gets on base. He's a solid runner. And the two questions that I think there are with Samuel Zavala, and it's going to depend on how much you like him, what you think the answer to these questions are how much power is he going to have, and is he a center fielder? You know, if you want to be super negative, you can be like, ah, he's a tweener. I don't think he can play. I don't think he's going to stay in center, and I don't know how much power he is. And if you want to be really bullish on him, you say, I think he's going to stay in center field. And, you know, the Padres, I know, were a little, you know, they were a little disappointed he didn't take to their strength and conditioning program as early as he did. But he did make progress finally with it this offseason. I think this offseason he bought in more than previous offseasons. But if you want to really buy in, you'd be like, I think he's a center fielder. He's getting stronger. He's going to be a 20 home run guy, and he has bat-to-ball skills. So, yeah, I mean, there's going to be some variance when you're trading for a 19-year-old guy. But, like, to me, he's a borderline top 100 prospect right now. Like there's some people who think he's top 100 prospect, or people say, ah, we need to wait and see a little bit more. But he's not that far off. And then Iriarte, you know, it's the same thing. It's you know, you compare his stuff to Drew Thorpe's, you know, like you could go at his best, it's a double plus fastball. It might be a 65 slider when it's on. So it's like, it's wild stuff. He doesn't have the polish Drew Thorpe does. So you can play the reliever risk card with Iriarte. But on one hand, he might be a number three starter. And when you say reliever risk, you're not talking about, oh, this guy's not going to throw strikes. He's a sixth inning guy. If it's a reliever, it might be an eighth inning guy. It might be a closer. So, again, you know, the odds are, you know, with the way prospects work out, are all three of these guys going to hit their ceilings? Are we going to get, you know, is Drew Thorpe a number three starter? Is Samuel Zavala a 20-homer center fielder? Is Iriarte a number three starter or a closer? In all likelihood, all three of those things aren't going to happen, but they all have the probability of happening. And I don't think Iriarte is further away from the top 100 for me, but if you were doing a top, he'd probably be in like the 150 to 200 range. If we were insane and we were going to rank all 900 prospects on our top 30 list in order, Iriarte would be like around 150 or so. And so I think they got three pretty good assets for Dylan Cease. And like the other thing, the reason I think it was probably a good trade is I have a lot of respect for Chris Getz. I think Chris Getz got put in a difficult situation the way the White Sox went about the hiring process. But I think Chris is a really smart guy. I think Chris, if you look, for an organization that for both good and bad was extremely loyal and there was not a lot of change in the organization, you know, Chris has brought in Paul Janish and Josh Barfield and Brian Bannister and Gene Watson, and I'm forgetting somebody else, but they've gone outside the organization to bring in new voices, different ideas. And so I think Chris is good. And we know I've heard conflict. I know the Yankees and Rangers were rumored to be in on it. I think the Diamondbacks might have been closer. I saw Scott Merkin right after the trade went down in Arizona while we were watching it rain at the spring breakout game. And he was saying Arizona was more in. I can't remember if he said New York and Texas were less in than believe. But there were multiple teams engaged with the White Sox. This wasn't Chris Getz and his staff said, you know, well, we got to get rid of Dylan Cease. It's time. Like, they had other options. So it wasn't just like you had AJ Preller calling, making an offer in a vacuum. Like, I think they knew what other teams were offering and decided to go ahead and do it. And you know, you can always argue with pitchers. If Dylan Cease pitched more like he did in 2022, maybe they could have gotten more for him. But, like, what if Dylan Cease, pitchers get hurt, something happened to him? Or, you know, not even serious, but, like, you know, sore elbow and he misses a couple starts, then you might get less. So I thought they got a very long answer. I know I rambled there. I thought they got a nice return for him.
So, you know, speaking of reliever risk a little bit, you know, it's not a prospect anymore, but Garrett Crochet, he's taken the ball on opening day for the White Sox. I don't think it's like a true opener type situation. I think, look, they got to find a way to get him 90 innings or so. Maybe is this, you think this is worth doing at this point, trying to see if you can salvage him a little bit in a starting role?
I do. I mean, 100%. Like, I don't know how it's going to play out. You know, I mean, that remains to be seen. But when they took him, what was he, the 11th overall pick, I think, in 2020? You know, and he'd had a weird year where he had some minor arm issues. So he literally pitched, it might have been the Wednesday that things shut down. He pitched one midweek game, and boom, the college season ended. But, you know, he went straight to the big leagues with White Sox. He'd been unbelievable in fall ball. And then the plan, 100%, all along was, this is Chris Sale version 2.0. Like Chris Sale, if everybody remembers, was first round pick, roughly, like, I think he was the 13th overall pick. And they told him, I mean, it was weird. They got him cheaper than they should have gotten. He shouldn't have lasted that long. But he fell in the White Sox laps. And they said, look, we're not giving you a big league contract, which a lot of the guys got at the time. But if you sign quick, we'll give you the opportunity. Like the White Sox were contending. We'll give you the opportunity to make the big league club as a reliever. And did he spend one or two full seasons as a reliever? Was it just one or was it two?
No. So that was the issue, Jim. So he was awesome at the alternate site. They brought him up. We were all excited. And then I think the fan base pretty collectively kind of thought like, okay, this is where you should transition him.
No, I meant Chris Sale back at.
Oh, Sale?
Was it 1 year or two
years? No,
it was just
the one. Yeah, just the
one full season. So yeah. The partial season and the full season. But anyway, yeah. So anyway, since the White Sox aren't going to win this year, I'd say sure. I mean, I know Crochet's had arm problems, but like, why not find out? Like the worst thing that happens is if he doesn't pan out as a starter, then you just put him back in a reliever. So like, I'm not saying you should just like, okay, we're going to try Jose Ramos at catcher or Colson Montgomery, you know, like. Like, I'm not saying go crazy, but this was always the plan. Like, they drafted him to be a starter, but they had a playoff team, and they thought he could help him right away. And I know he's been kind of waylaid by injuries, but 100%, I sound like I'm, like, I don't know, like this is, like, Pravda, and I'm tacitly endorsing everything the White Sox are doing. But no, I why not find out? Like the worst thing that happened is you put him back in the bullpen. So I would find out, and they're not going to go nuts and have him throw 180, like you were saying, Jim, they're not going to have him, hey, make 30 starts and go 180 innings. They'll ease him in. But yeah, I think it's 100% worth seeing, especially because not that it matters win total this year, but who else? Do they even have five starters right now? Like, so they might as well find out. Like I would. What do you guys think? Are you guys for that or?
Yeah, I think so. So the one thing before like Ian chimes in, because we're going to talk Noah Schultz too, and maybe Grant Taylor. How much do you buy into, like, what are your thoughts on, I don't know if it's the Verducci effect anymore, right? But like this dude hasn't thrown any innings. So there's definitely a limit, right? So I mentioned 90. I don't know what the number is, but it's not like he's going to be throwing 5 2/3 like every fifth day. So, you know, how do you kind of manage that?
I mean, you could, like, I do kind of believe in the Verducci effect. I don't know what the exact number is. I mean, I also would say Crochet's 25 now, got to be 25 or so. So it's not like he's an 18-year-old kid out of high school and I'm asking him to throw 150 innings. But yeah, I mean, whether it's 90, 100, whatever, like, they're going to have to do some management, whether it's, and I haven't paid attention. Like, I agree with you. I don't think they're setting this up. He's going to be an opener and go two innings to start. My guess is, he'll go 3, 4, 5 innings max. And at some point, like if he starts piling innings, they may just shut him down early or they may give him some time off. Like they'll regulate it somehow. I mean, it looks like, to be honest, looking at the White Sox this year, that rotation, like who knows what it's going to look like this year, how many guys are going to get starts. But again, they're not trying to win this year. So why not? Like if, Nick DeStream might make the opening day roster. Like if Jake Eater gets back on track, we may see Jake Eater make some starts. If Jonathan Cannon throws strikes, we may see Jonathan Cannon make some starts by the end of the, like, we're going to see a lot of guys making starts for the White Sox this year. It's not going to just be five guys. So I think they're going to get whatever innings they get out of Garrett Crochet. And if they get him up to 90 or 100 and that's it. Okay. Like, I don't know if they'll, you know, how they'll manage that. If they'll give him time off and bring him back or he'll pitch 100 and they'll ramp him down, or if we'll go to a 6-man rotation. who knows? But I'm not so much worried about that. And I totally like there is no way the White Sox are not going to just roll him out there for 30 starts and 150 innings. But like, yeah, I'd find out like because you like look, this year doesn't matter in terms of they're not going to win this year. We know that. Like, who knows? I don't think it'll be 25. Let's say 2026 is a year where maybe they return to contention. All this depth in the farm system starts to really get to Chicago. So let's take the next year or two and find out, is Garrett Crochet a starter? And if he's not, then we put him back in the bullpen, and that's fine. They should be doing, again, I'm not putting Jose Ramos at catcher or, you know, teach Colson and Montgomery to switch hit. I'm trying to think of some ridiculous examples. But they should reasonably experiment with some things to find out what they have in guys.
Speaking of the system, you know, the overall system ranking is somewhere in the kind of in the middle of the pack. And how much better do you think the system is at this point now than it was last year?
I think it's a lot better. I mean, I know we had them ranked a year ago at this time. I'm trying to look here on my computer. My computer's locking up on me. There we go. A year ago at this time, we had the White Sox ranked 26th. 2 years ago at this time, we had the White Sox ranked 30th. And you can't rank lower than 30th. We had him at 20th in our preseason rankings this year, and that was before the trade. Like, we update our list, but we don't update the rankings, thank God. Every time there's a trade or a guy, like it's not going to be like, hey, Michael Bush graduates from the Cubs, like, on opening day, which he will. We're going to knock him down two spots. But I do think they're closer to 15th, and I just think it's a lot deeper. Like, they don't necessarily have, you know, they have added Drew Thorpe as a top 100 prospect they added. They don't necessarily have six or seven top 100 guys. But just looking at our top 30 list, which I do, compared to like a year ago this time, Drew Thorpe, their number three prospect, wasn't in the organization. That's also true of Edgar Caro at 5, Samuel Zavala at 6, Jacob Gonzalez at 7, Nick Destrini at 8, Jairo Iriarte at 9, Jake Eater at 10. That's just the top 10. You know, Grant Taylor, George Walkow, Seth Keener, Dominic Fletcher, Jordan Leisure, Philander Baroa, Kai Bush. Those guys are all in our 11 and 20 range. They weren't in the organization either. And like it was, the organization was in rough shape because you had a year ago, if we were talking about the farm system, you know, you had Colson Montgomery, Noah Schultz, who are super interesting guys. And then you had guys like, you know, a couple guys like Brian Ramos, who's not quite a top 100 prospect, but is interesting. And then like, I mean, you'd get to 10 and like even 10th on the, I don't know who was 10th on our list exactly a year ago, but it's like, it was guys with question marks. It wasn't like, okay, that guy's probably a starter. That guy's probably an everyday player. It's like, ah, we hope this guy might be a starter. We hope this guy does enough to be an everyday player. So I think the, like, well, if we updated the rankings based on the trade, they'd probably be, say, 15 or 16 on the list. But I don't even think that, like, if you broke it down into, like, superstar or star, potential star talent and depth, I think their depth stands out even more than where they'd rank. Like you win with stars. You want to have those guys too. But I do think their depth has gone from like one of the two or three thinnest systems in baseball the previous 2 years to now they might be pushing top 10 in terms of, you know, they'd be in that 10 to 15 range in terms of overall depth.
Yeah, so like if you had to, like if something happened, right, and you needed to slot in a new number 30, you would have no issues with that. I remember speaking to you after the White Sox traded for Craig Kimbrell, and you were freaking out that you were going to have to.
No,
find...
I was celebrating. Yeah.
Yeah, but didn't you think that you had to put prospects on the list and there was nobody to put on it? So, yeah.
You're right, James. I celebrate the Craig Kimbrell trade because you're exactly right. They had made so many trades when they were making that run that they did not have a deep system. Like they already promoted a bunch of guys to Chicago. So they didn't have a deep system. So I was like really scraping like to come up with guys to fill out the list. And the funny thing was, they traded for somebody before they got Kimbrell. They needed the 40-man spot. And they released Tyler Johnson, who was on our top 30 list. I think he'd had surgery. And they released him. And, like, I was like, man, they're – and, like, it's generally not good to have a lot of relievers on a top 30 list. And they probably had 6 on their list at that time. And they released Tyler Johnson. I was like, you got to be kidding me. So I came up with somebody to replace Tyler Johnson. And so you're exactly right, James. When they traded for Craig Kimbrell, we didn't know who the players were. And you figured it's got to be at least 2 guys. I was like, I literally don't have 2 guys because we're also in this weird, like, netherworld – where we hadn't officially updated. We hadn't done our midseason update yet. So we can't use the draft guys yet. So I couldn't use anybody from the draft. So like, which would have been like, when I did, I added like 5 or 6 guys. So I don't even remember who I would have been looking at. Like, it would have like literally been like Ian Eskridge and James Fox are now 29 and 30 on the list. Like, I literally had run out of guys, and I was freaking out. When I found out it was Nick Madrigal and Cody Hoyer, I was like, yes, like that trade could not have been better. Like, which also I think literally spoke to the fact, I don't think they had any more prospects to trade. I mean, unless they overpaid, like unless they were giving up guys they didn't want to give up, there was nobody left in the system to trade. So thank God. Like, but yeah, like now I actually, I'm trying to think, I think it was Zach DeLoach. It was Alex Spies, Zach DeLoach, and Jacob Burke were on our list. Those reports are written. Like, those reports are already written because we had updated our list this year. So, and like, yeah, like they could go trade three guys today. And I don't even have to do anything. I just say put, you know, Alex Spies back on the list. So yeah, I'm in much better shape. And I already had, I think, plotted out like three or four guys that I knew they liked, that I could, like when we do our new list, we you're not locked in. But you make a list of three or four guys that would be next up, like if something happened in the preseason. Like, obviously, if they make a move in June, I'm not beholden to the list in March. But I already have that. I'm good to go. Like, I don't want to write up a bunch of guys, but like Terrell Tatum, Tyler Schweitzer, I like those guys. Aldrin Batiste is another interesting guy. God, I'm forgetting. Frazier Ellard is a guy they really like. Like, I could go on. I could come up with another 10 prospects right now. Guys who, honestly, a year ago, all those guys probably would have been like in the 15 to 25 range on the White Sox list. And now they're, you know, 35 to 40.
Yeah. Speaking of, one of the things that was a thing with this last version of the rebuild was that the White Sox system was very top heavy. And now that they've got some depth, jumping back to the top five, do you have an ETA for what you think that we can expect for the top five guys here in the system? You know, everybody's pretty much got the same five guys in the top part of the system with Montgomery and Schultz. Obviously not so much Schultz because he doesn't have the innings logged and he's young, but Ramos and Caro and Thorpe.
Yep. It's going to be interesting with those guys, Ian, because like I know we have these new rules that are supposed to encourage teams to promote prospects, but Colson Montgomery, when you knew Tim Anderson was coming back, there was talk, hey, Colson Montgomery might be the shortstop. And like, I love Colson Montgomery. Like, we have him number nine on our top 100. Colson really hasn't played that much in Double A. Like, in part of that was Project Birmingham, which wasn't really, hey, he's ready for Double A's. Like, we're doing Project Birmingham. So like, Colson, it'd probably be best for Colson if he got most of the season in the minor leagues. And you're going to run into the flip side of the new, I can't remember what the acronym is, like prospect incentive program, program incentive, like whatever it's called, where if your guy gets a full year, if your guy gets a full year of service time and he wins rookie of the year, or if he goes on to finish top three MVP, Cy Young the next couple years after that, you get a free pick. Like the Mariners did for Julio Rodriguez, both the Diamondbacks and the Orioles did for Gunnar Henderson and, Corbin Carroll. But the flip side of that is, and there's a number of guys, I know Michael Bush with the Cubs is one, I know Nolan Chanuel with the Angels is one. Those teams, Bush was up and down with the Dodgers, but the Angels, when they rushed Chanuel to the big leagues, they did it precisely so he would end the year with 45 days of service time. If you get to 46, you're no longer a rookie and you aren't eligible for the draft pick. And so if you aren't calling Colson Montgomery, or I'll even throw Brian Ramos or Edgar Caro, or up at the beginning, like Drew Thorpe, I think they're going to get, just because I think he's going to be the first guy up. I think we'll see him around midseason. Cause like, again, like they're rebuilding, so it doesn't matter. I don't know who their starters are going to be. Like if Drew Thorpe, my guess is he'll open the season in Charlotte. If he pitches well in Charlotte, I think he's going to be up when he's ready. And they're going to need guys to fill the rotation. With Montgomery and Caro and Ramos, or Caro and Ramos, I think it's going to be more like Carroll got rushed. He shouldn't have been in Double A last year. Like, he's good, but he could catch his breath. Like, the Angels just push everybody so quick, and they skipped him a level from Single A to Double A. And Ramos, I like Ramos, but he's had some injuries. So I don't even think he's played above Double A yet. So you can make a case that those guys should just spend most of the year in Charlotte. And then I think, let's say we get to midseason and Colson Montgomery's tearing it up. It would be cool to see Colson in Chicago. But if I'm the White Sox, I'm realistically better off waiting to promote Colson, So he can't exceed 45 days. And then he comes up next year and maybe he's rookie of the year and I get an extra pick. So I don't necessarily think we're going to see those position players. It really, I mean, merit aside, from a business standpoint, from trying to get the extra pick, from delaying arbitration and free agency, although the free agency will be delayed after he's down for a little while. I don't know that it makes sense to promote those guys before mid-August. Like even if Colson's hitting 330 with 20 homers to Charlotte mid-season, it's tough because you might lose that draft pick. So we'll see. Different teams handle that differently. But, there's more incentive to have the guy on your opening day roster or call him up early so you get a full year of service time. But, once you blow past that, there's incentive to not call the guy up early. And, before, your two incentives for keeping a guy in the minors were, the Chris Bryant situation where we're trying to delay his free agency year. So you keep the guy down for 2 or 3 weeks, which now you can still argue, but I'd rather have the extra year of Chris Bryant or I'd rather maybe get a first-round pick, which is less certain. And then the other thing was arbitration, Super 2 guys in arbitration. And, the Giants got a little cute with Buster Posey and almost didn't make the playoffs in 2010 and wound up winning the World Series. But now, and then the Super 2, I don't know, that would be roughly mid-season. It would change from year to year. Where the cutoff fell for who would be eligible for arbitration or not. Now you've pushed us back kind of to mid-August with the 45-day thing. So we'll see. But I don't necessarily think we're going to see, even if they're tearing it up in AAA, see the position guys before then.
Yeah, so the other guy, up there at the top is Noah Schultz. Obviously, we're not going to see him. What does a successful season even look like for him, right? How many innings is it? I don't really care where he starts. Me and Ian have talked about that. Yeah. Whether it's Canny, whether it's Winston, he just needs innings. What is a successful season for him, though?
I think this is a successful season for him. You talked about the Verducci effect about not piling. You can't pile too many more innings on a guy from 1 year to the next. He threw 27 last year. Realistically, he probably threw more than 27 because I'm sure he was throwing sides and all that stuff's meticulously tracked. But realistically, we'll all play armchair pitching coaches here. 75 innings, you probably aren't going to push him much past 75. And I honestly think a successful year for Noah Schultz is that he just gets the 75 innings in. And there's no physical issues. I don't think anybody's too alarmed, really, by what happened last year. But, he came down with a flexor strain in spring training, which I think they're handling him very delicately because he has the potential to be so good. So he had the flexor strain, so he missed the first couple of months. And then I don't know how many innings he would have pitched, but he had, a shoulder impingement was what officially it was, and he missed a couple starts at the end of the year. He would have pitched a little bit more. So I think just – getting 75 innings or whatever that innings target is with no physical problems, that's a successful year. Because, look, we know the stuff's there. There's still – it's weird. He, really hasn't pitched a lot the last couple of years because his senior year of high school, he famously had mono. I think he pitched literally 4 innings in high school, and they pitched a little in the prospect league. So we haven't seen him even in pro ball. They kind of had him carefully. It was 10 starts, 27 innings, roughly 3 innings a start. He's throwing harder than when we last saw him throwing regularly, I guess on the showcase circuit in 21, the summer 21. So we don't know. I don't know. Can Noah Schultz sustain mid-90s velocity, 30 starts a year, 5 or 6 innings a start? We aren't going to know that yet. But, it's so encouraging. He's throwing harder. And the slider's a wipeout pitch. I think they're working on a two-seamer even to give him a different look. His sheer size and arm slot, I don't know how lefty ever gets hit off that guy. Randy Johnson, maybe. How many guys can you come up with who release, his release point is I'm exaggerating. Basically, it's he's throwing the ball from first base. But, with his size and his arm angle, outside of Randy Johnson, I'm missing somebody. I don't know who else throws the ball. The ball's coming out of his hand from a place where it doesn't come out of anybody else. Chris Sale was a lanky lefty and was lower arm slot. Sale's 6'4"? He wasn't 6'9". Schultz is releasing the ball probably 6 or 8 inches closer to first base than Chris Sale was. So even if he doesn't even have, I'm getting excited thinking about it. If he stays healthy and his stuff is what we've seen in flashes, where it's coming from, that guy's gonna be a superstar. Like, look, I know there's risk with pitching, and like, you know, I'm not putting him in the Hall of Fame or anything like that yet. But like, I write this, I play my greatest hits every time. Like, just like Colson Montgomery, I can't believe we didn't compare him to Corey Seager. Like, I can't believe I missed that opportunity because everybody has to. We have to compare him to Corey Seager. We've been doing that for years, and I say this all the time. Like, with the arm slot and left handed in his size, you think about Randy Johnson, and what people forget about Randy Johnson, who is. You can make a case Randy Johnson's the best left-handed pitcher in the history of baseball. I mean, you can argue Lefty Grove. You can argue Sandy Koufax did it for a shorter stint. You can argue Steve Carlton, argue Warren Spahn. But, like, you can make the argument Randy Johnson was the best ever. When Randy Johnson was Noah Schultz's age, he couldn't throw strikes. He was putting up 5-plus ERAs at Southern California. And even in the big leagues for a while, he had success, but he's still walking a ton of dudes. And then he had the crazy, you know, the story is, like, he talked to Nolan Ryan and basically had an epiphany and then threw a lot more strikes like immediately after that. Not that Nolan Ryan ever threw a ton of strikes, but anyway, all I'm saying is, like, so you, that Randy Johnson comparison is so natural, but he is so far ahead of where Randy Johnson was at the same age. It's not even funny. So like I just like, again, I'm raving like a lunatic about Noah Schultz here, but I think James, if he just stays healthy and pitches whatever that innings target is, that's a successful year. Because nobody's going to hit that guy. Like, I mean, we saw it last year. He gave up, what, 3 runs in 27 innings? It was all
– one start.
It was all in the same start.
Yeah.
All home runs. There were guys, like, ambushing him, and he didn't locate. But, like, other than that, I mean, I know it's super small sample size. Nobody touched that guy all year. Like, so, like, yeah, it's – and I'm with you. I don't care where he starts. Like, it could be – you start him in the Arizona Complex League. They're going to start in May. Like, whatever you want. Like, just get him his innings. Like – I don't know that we'll – I doubt we'll see him in double A. No A-ball hitter is going to hit that guy. Wait, we're talking single A or high A?
Yeah.
Like,
he's going
to hit that guy.
He's going to go to Winston, I think. And he can stay there. That's fine. Like, he could just
– yeah.
Just be there and stay there. So, yeah, that's what – Josh Norris of Baseball America said that last year, that he saw every run that Noah Schultz gave up last year. But he – you know, I think he went to, like, all of his starts. But, like, yeah, he was literally, like, every run that guy's given up, he's seen.
I talked to a pro scout who saw every run Noah Schultz gave up last year. He was that I think that was the one time he saw Noah Schultz, maybe some twice, and he still loved him. Because, like, he said, I mean, not making excuses, but I think two of the guys were, like, looking to ambush, like, a first-pitch fastball, and they did, and they weren't located well. But he was like – the pro scout was like, I saw him give up 3 home runs in, what was it, 2 or 3 innings. He's like, I don't care. I still love that guy.
Yeah.
So
Ian, you think the most controversial – like, prospect in the system right now is their first rounder from last year, Jacob Gonzalez, I think. And obviously, look, he goes out in his first season. I don't really care about the first season for a college guy, obviously, but it was pretty rough. You know, we'd heard that he looked a lot different in instructs. The swing definitely looks different. Did you see him at all when you were in Arizona? And then just your thoughts on Jacob Gonzalez.
I didn't get to see him because I did 4 camps. I came in after Jonathan Mayo. He did the first 11 camps in Arizona for MLB Network. I did the last 4 for MLB Network and MLB.com. And so I didn't get the White Sox. I was going to see the White Sox on the spring breakout game. I was all set to call that game for Marquee, and it rained out. So I never got to see him play. But I heard the same thing. And, like, it's tough because the White Sox picked 15th in last year's draft. And it looks like picks 13 and 14 could be 2 of the biggest steals in the entire first round. Like, you had your 5 guys, Paul Skeens and company, who were, like, legitimate number 1 overall type talents who were going to go 1 through 5, and they did. But I still, especially based on the way other teams are even talking about him now, I'm not sure how Matt Shaw lasted until pick 13 in the Cubs and Kyle Teal lasted until pick 14 in the Red Sox. And unfortunately for the White Sox, like, both those guys, I honestly think if they'd been there at 15, would have been an easy decision. The White Sox would have just taken one of them, but it's not the way the draft works. And they went 13 and 14. Like, Gonzalez was a guy who coming into the year was a potential top 5 pick. If you were a team that, say, didn't want to take one of the high school guys who was going to go up that high, really good track record in college, won a College World Series championship, started shortstop 2 years for Team USA. He struggled to turn on pitches in his pro debut. And you know what? And that happens sometimes to guys. Like, I'll give you an example that will hopefully make people feel better about Jacob Gonzalez. Said the same thing about Josh Young with the Rangers. When the Rangers drafted him, I think it was 8th overall, and he went, I think, to one of the Rangers Class A teams. And he couldn't turn on pitches. If you go back and look at Josh Young's first year in the minors, like that summer after he signed, he hit for average and drew some walks, but he did not hit for any power at all. And guys are like, you can't turn on inside fastball. And so what happened? Like, Josh Young's a really good hitter. Rangers worked with him, you know, made some adjustments. Last year, he's a rookie, makes the All-Star game, wins a World Series. He's hitting for power. Like, so guys adjust. And, like, and the White Sox did, and Gonzalez did make some adjustments. He's standing more upright at the plate. Like, the belief is that will allow him to load quicker, have a better swing path, and be able to drive the ball in the air more. I mean, this guy did hit for power in college. I mean, and I'm with you. Like, I don't – the pro debuts, especially now that the draft is so late, like, these guys, like Mississippi – Ole Miss didn't make the – make. I don't even think they made the SEC tournament last year. So his season ended, like, 2 months before he signed. And, like, yeah, guys do work out, but you're not facing game competition. And then, like, bam, like, you sign now, you know, you maybe have a little mini camp in Arizona, and now you're playing in pro. He slugged 260. He didn't look good. He's a little hard to figure out in the draft because he's not, like, if you don't like Jacob Gonzalez, you might call him a 30 runner on the 2080 scale. Like, I think he's probably closer to a 40. But there's a question. Is he really a shortstop? Like, it's not – that burst. He doesn't have that shortstop burst. He doesn't have that, like, plus, you know, really super strong arm. But he, like, has really high baseball IQ, and he makes plays. So, like, if you didn't like him, like, you could knock the athleticism, and then you look at the pro debut, and you're like, oh, man, this doesn't look good. I think he's a lot better player than he played in the pro debut. James, and I'm with you, James. I don't think the pro debuts really matter. You get enthused. You like it when the guy has a good pro debut. Like, but I don't think in the long run it really matters. Now, if he comes out and he slugged, you know, 320 over a full 2024 season, then I'd be like, uh-oh, like, there's a problem. But, like, I'm not worried about it, and I want to see how the swing plays. All I know is the guy played, and yeah, I know I'm an SEC homer who went to Georgia. Guy played in the best conference in college baseball and was a star. And he started at shortstop. Like, Team USA isn't about, like, you know, keeping everybody. Team USA plays to win games. And Team USA 2 years in a row thought he was the best shortstop, not just on the team, but they played him at shortstop. So this guy, his track record's really, really good. I'm not sure he's a long-term big league shortstop, but he's a much better player than he showed. And I'm 100% not pushing the pan. I feel like I'm sounding like a White Sox homer here. And I'm not, but like I'm 100% not pushing the panic button on Jacob Gonzalez yet. We need to see a full season, see how it looks.
Jumping from one college baseball powerhouse to another, the White Sox drafted Grant Taylor out of LSU. You know, sort of kind of like Noah Schultz, what can you expect out of Grant Taylor this year? What are you thinking that we're going to see?
I don't have the date of his surgery right in front of me, but he blew out, like, right before the season started at LSU. So I don't remember if I put it in my scouting report. I'm looking here real quick. He blew out his elbow right before the season started in February. So I'm going to assume he had surgery in February or March. So, like, I think we might see him on the mound by the end of the year. Like, I would think we'd at least see him in instructionally. I don't think, unless he came back and it was like a Walker Buehler type situation where everybody's like, oh, my God, this stuff's, like, unbelievable. I don't think we'd see him in the fall league this year. That'd probably be a little too much, but I think we'll see him back in the mound by the end of the year. And that's another pick I really liked a lot. I mean, they kind of did the same thing the year before with Peyton Paulette, where they took an SEC guy who was getting first round buzz, who blew out before the season started, and took him in the second round. You know, because you, like, if he's healthy, you aren't getting him there. Like, he might have gone first. I will say, I've heard, and this is like ridiculous, but I've heard some people say, like, oh man, he looked better than Paul Skeens in fall practice. And that's 100% not true. Paul Skeens looked unbelievable. And Grant Taylor looked really, really good too. But at least the guys I talk to, and I do Louisiana for the draft, and we had Paul Skeens number 4 on our preseason list. We had him, we were all in on him. We had him behind, you know, Dylan Cruz, Wyatt Langford, and Chase Dolander. The guys I were talking to are like, if Paul Skeens pitches like this in the spring, he might go number 1, which he did. And Grant Taylor looked good, but nobody was saying Grant Taylor's better than Paul Skeens. But I've heard people try to claim that. But no, Grant Taylor looked really, really good. I mean, fastball, slider, cutter, all really good. He didn't throw a lot of strikes his first year at LSU. He did throw more strikes on the Cape. I think he threw like something like two changeups in 2022. So like, he needs to work on a changeup. Like, but like, he did. Yeah, it's college baseball. You're not throwing your third pitch if it's well behind your two best pitches very much. But I think you know, we see him on the mound, you know, by the end of the year, and if not by the end of the year, in instructional league, and you're just trying to get him going so that he's ready to pitch, you know, 75, 90 innings maybe in 2025. But like, I thought that was a great pick, and it was funny. So we were doing the draft, and on MLB Network, and Jay Johnson, they usually get a college coach to join us. And Jay Johnson was there, and I knew Jay knew he was losing him, but Jay's still like, there was like a slight wince when it was like, you know, the White Sox take, you know, ID number 378264, whatever the number is, Taylor Grant A, right hand. And like, I remember looking over at Jay, and Jay like tried to hold, he winced a little bit, like, but he knew, like, if it wasn't White Sox, somebody else was going to take him pretty quick. And then I love, especially if you're in a rebuilding mode like the White Sox are. Like, you can't take all guys coming off Tommy John, but you should roll the dice on a Grant Taylor. You should roll the dice in the seventh round and invest $1 million in Grant Wolkow. I mean, yeah, you got to do that type of stuff. I don't know, I call him Grant Wolkow, George Wolkow, but you have to do things like that. That's just smart drafting. You build a portfolio, you get some you know, nice solid safer guys, and you get some risk guys, and you get some college and high school and hitters and pitchers. Yeah, like if it were me, I would always draft to balance the portfolio. And I thought they did a really nice job of that last year.
So a guy you mentioned, George Wolkow, it seems like he, and even like your Javier Mogollon, I think I said that right, like one of the youngest guys in their system. So they're going to play a little bit sooner this year because the ACL is starting earlier. How can that benefit them? And then what do you think of that overall, just like that season ending sooner or starting sooner and ending sooner?
Yeah, I haven't quite wrapped my head around it just because we've been so busy with doing our top 30s and run around spring training and then spring breakout, not trying to get geared up for the draft. I don't think I have my head fully wrapped around all the reasons why it moved. I talked about it briefly with one farm director who was really for it. I think it's a good thing for the players because here's why it's good. Like you mentioned George and Javier. In the past, what would happen, you know, George reclassified, so he's super young. Like, so in the past, what would happen is George would have stayed in Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona, and been in extended spring for 2.5 months. And, you know, it's going to be a trillion degrees because it's Arizona. And then he'd start in Arizona Complex League. And then unless he just tore it up from the beginning, you know, that would be it. Now, I think what it gives you the opportunity to do, especially when they have, you know, the roster or the, it's not roster, but like, the system limit is 165 players on your U.S.-based rosters. What it allows you to do is, so now George and Javier Mogollon are going to get the experience they would have gotten in June, July, August. They're going to get that in May and June. And if they do well, just like if you start whoever, we'll use Jacob. Let's say you start Jacob Gonzalez in high A, and he plays well for 2 or 3 months, you move him up to double A. In the past with the young guys, if they played well, like they weren't ready for single A before the Arizona Complex League started, but they have two really good months, you're like, man, it'd be great to play this guy in single A. Like maybe you promote him for the playoffs, like if the team's in the playoffs. Now if George Wolkow or Javier Mogollon or whoever comes up and plays well in May and June in the Complex League, you know, you can then send them to single A in July. So I think that's the benefit. My understanding, again, I haven't delved deep into this, because I think also, like, you're going to see, I don't know if it'll be instructional league, but like when the Complex League season ends, it's not like the White Sox are going to say, George and Javier and your 28 best friends here in Camelback Ranch, just go sit by the beach and hang out. Like they're going to play, I would assume they're going to play like the other teams, at least on the west side of Arizona, you know, the Guardians, the Reds, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Mariners, you're going to be playing inter-squad games, I would think, you know, like with some draft guy. Like if you get a high school guy out of the draft, you're probably not sending that guy to single A, but you're also not going to want that guy to do nothing, you know, all for the rest of the summer. So I think it'll just give them more. I think it'll allow more guys to make the jump from the Complex League to single A in the same year, just because the calendar allows you to do that. And if the guy's not ready, then you can, you know, do inter squad stuff and play some other team. Just like, you know, on the backfields of spring training, like while big league camp's going on, like White Sox might have their double A and triple A teams playing the Padres double A and triple A teams at Camelback Ranch, and their A ball teams are over in Peoria playing the Padres A ball team. You know, they mix and match like that. I think you're going to see the same thing where, you know, you can have, you know, teams will do that. And while the complex league only officially will be playing for 2 months, those guys might be getting 4 months of games. Like the extended spring training part of it and the game part of it will continue, will be after instead of before. So I kind of like it, although I just have not thought it all the way through.
Yeah, I think it helps too for, sorry, Ian, it helps too for like a guy like Christian Opper, you know, like maybe you're reluctant to send him right to Canny, but like you also want him pitching in games. Like now he can just start in the ACL if you want to, and you know, with the intention that if he's really good, he just goes to Kannapolis, like instead of being an extended spring for so long.
Yeah, and I think like the weather part of it too. I mean, the White Sox don't have a Midwest League affiliate anymore, but you know, Midwest League's up here where we are, and like it's like 30 and 40 degrees at times in April, and you don't really want your young pitchers pitching in that. Now they can go pitch in Arizona. And then the nice side of it is instead of playing your Arizona League games where you basically have to play at 6 p.m. when you're playing in July and August. Like I've been out there. I remember when the All-Star game was out there, I went to my first Arizona League game. It was 107 degrees at 6 p.m. Like you can't really do a whole lot of work. So like if you get the complex league is in May and June, like, yeah, it's going to be hot by the end of that. But like, I don't know if you guys made out spring training this year, but like spring training when I was out there a week ago, it was like 60 degrees most of the time. Like it's not oppressive. So like the weather, it benefits you on both ends. If you have your Christian Opor, and that great example where he may not be ready and you don't want to send him someplace cold, you can keep him in Arizona and tune him up and then send him out when it's, you know, like you're getting your work in Arizona. You're like your official games in when it's not, you know, a trillion degrees and you're playing on the surface of the sun.
Yeah. For me personally, I'm happy that the White Sox do not have a Midwest affiliate. You know, I would love to be able to go and have one close, but the temperatures, I'm happier that they're down in Carolina dealing with that. I'm going to stop James because I know James is going to hijack this thing and take it straight to the draft, but I'm going to stop that before it starts. And I'm going to ask you the last, you know, like the, say 20 through 30 in the top 30, is there somebody you know, in the bottom half of the system that you're looking to see do something this year to take a jump, you know, and raise their stock up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting guy down there is probably Javier Mogollon. I think we may have him ranked lower than other lists too. I just want to see him in full, like in the U.S. Like great debut. Like I don't know how much DSL numbers really matter. It's kind of like your pro debut. Like you prefer the guy to have a really good year than a really bad year, but they don't really matter. But like he's interesting. He's got, you know, he's only 5'8", but it's really good bat to ball skills. It's a naturally compact swing. He barrels a lot of balls, but he hits the ball hard. Like I don't know. I don't think his list of weight's 160. And I'm not really sure he's 160, but he hits the ball hard. He can drive the ball. Like there might be, this guy might really open some eyes. So I think he's got probably the most upward mobility of anybody in that 21 to 30 range. I think like the guy who's probably the biggest sleeper in the system for me is Mason Adams. Like nobody really talks about Mason Adams, but he, you know, we talked about, or I mentioned earlier, they don't have a lot of guys who are, you describe as polished. He's pretty polished. He's one of the best curveballs in the system. He had a lot of success last year. And just nobody, like, I mean, the White Sox do. But, like, I don't know how much you guys talk about him. But, like, we didn't really have him on our radar much before the end of last year. Like nobody ever talks about Mason Adams. And, like if we were ranking most polished pitchers in the system, like, who have a legit chance to start in the big leagues, he might be two or three. Like he's pretty good. Like I think it's Drew Thorpe, Jonathan Cannon, and Mason Adams are your three most polished guys. So anyway, like I think he's a big sleeper. And then the guy who I think personally the White Sox, when we do our lists, we get input from the organizations, we get input from a lot of scouts outside the organization. So it's not, this isn't like the White Sox saying, hey, here's our prospects 1 through 30. But I know 100% if we asked the White Sox, like we asked five club officials who work in farm system, who is the guy ranked too low on the MLB pipeline White Sox top 30 list? They would all tell you it's Brooks Baldwin. They love Brooks Baldwin. So I'm curious to see, you know, what happens with him. He's got like an interesting combination of, it's more skills than tools. He's a solid runner, maybe a little quicker than that, but it's just nonstop energy, like high baseball IQ, pretty good contact, switch hitter. He's been better from the left side of the pro. Like, I don't know, like when all is said and done, like it might be a lot of 50s, like average tools across the board. Maybe it's 45 power. You know, he runs a little better than that, but he's just a good player and they love him. And I was talking to the same pro scout who I told you saw Noah Schultz's 3 home runs. He's like, I don't care. I still love that guy. Sam pro scout told me, he made the comment that like Brooks Baldwin, like that guy runs hard first base every time, doesn't take any, like he makes every play he should in the field. He's always in the right position, like on a cutoff or backing up plays. And he made the comment, he's like, haven't seen a lot of that in the White Sox system the last 2 or 3 years. Like, so like that guy just plays the game, right? And I'm telling you, like you guys talk to people with the White Sox and like you guys have your own, like where's Brooks Baldwin on your list? Do you know?
I ranked him on mine. So essentially what we did, there was five of us that ranked and then we kind of used like a prospects points, like formula to pick the 30. Yeah. So I don't think he's on ours but you know, he's right in that next tier. I definitely ranked him though. I like Brooks.
Oh, well, there you go. The White Sox thing. But, and it's like, it's funny, like with the depth they have, with all these guys they keep bringing in, like you guys know, too, one of the big secrets that fans don't necessarily consider is like, so we do a top 30. The difference between the guys who are 26 to 30th on our list and the guys who are 31 to 35 on our list, there's no difference. Like I mean, there might be in a rare occasion, like if you have a super deep system, maybe 26 is really good and then 27. But like, it's just a matter of taste. Like, what profile do you like? Who do you believe in? Like, yeah, I know. Like, it feels like, oh, we hate the guys who aren't on the top 30. I don't hate Jacob Burke. I ran out of room for him. But anyway, so that was my 3-pronged answer. But like, the White Sox love Brooks Baldwin, and like if most teams do an internal list, like if the White Sox did the same thing you guys did and five guys vote and they mashed it together and had a list, I'll bet you Brooks Baldwin would be they just traded for the three guys in the Dylan Cease trade, but Brooks Baldwin would be probably 20 or higher on the list. So anyway, that's my 3-part answer. Javier Maguillon I think has the highest upside, and we've also seen the least out of him. I think Mason Adams is going to be the guy who we might, if you told me Mason Adams ended the season in the White Sox rotation, wouldn't shock me. Like White Sox fans are probably gonna be like, who is this guy? But like, he's actually pretty interesting. And then the guy, the White Sox if you were asking people, the White Sox, a question, they would tell you it would be Brooks Baldwin if they were looking at our list.
All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I kind of think that Mason Adams kind of has the same kind of flavor that Davis Martin had, is that a lot of people, most White Sox fans had no idea who he was. And, you know, I was watching him, you know, do things in Winston-Salem and Birmingham. And I kind of personally always, you know, I was pumping him up, you know, putting video of him up a lot. And then he got called up and everybody's like, oh, he came out of nowhere. And I'm like, no, he didn't. You know, he just added a couple of miles an hour to his fastball. So.
Well, I thought it would help Mason Adams too, that he piggybacked Schultz all year last year for the, you know, so, I mean, I thought people did see him quite a bit because he would always do that. So yeah, Jim, we don't want to keep you too much longer, but.
No, this is
so,
fun.
So it's, the, like, you know, like White Sox got the 5th pick. I kind of perceived it as not that great of a draft. Right. But they're going to get a good player at 5, like they're, and obviously, right. But this college class at the top is a lot more interesting than I was expecting. And I know you're probably going to bring up your guy from Georgia. My goodness.
Well, he's not going to get to White Sox.
No, I know that, but I mean, I feel like you tried to fit Charlie Condon in a lot. And he's even exceeded probably your expectations.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. So like, I think we're going to look back, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, the 2023 draft, there were 5, like that would have been a great draft pick number 5 in, because you had 5 guys who were legitimate number 1 overall picks in any draft. Like the White Sox would have gotten Walker Jenkins, which would have been really nice. And like, so this year's class suffers in comparison And I don't think the high school class is nearly as deep, but the White Sox are picking high enough. Like in every draft, there's a point where you're like, okay, the drops off like right around here at the top of the draft. The White Sox are safe. Like they're not going to get one of the top two guys in the draft. They're going to get a good player. I'm also going to say, I'm going to make this point every time I talk about the draft. So they have the rule with the draft lottery is if you win a lottery pick, which is a top six pick, if you're a team like the White Sox, which is a higher revenue club, you can only pick in the top. You can't like they, so they won the lottery this year. They can't pick higher than 10th next year. White Sox can lose 120 games this year. They're picking 10th next year. But actually, they're not picking 10th because if you're a low-revenue team, you can only win a lottery pick 2 years
in a row. They're
going to
pick 11th. Yeah, I know.
They're going to pick 11th because the A's can't pick higher than 10th. But here's my point. I get what they're trying to do. Okay, whatever. We can argue whether teams tank, really don't tank, whatever. You need to change the rule in the next CBA. I'm giving my advice. Owners, players, listen to this now. I've said this before. I don't know if I've ever said it on a podcast. It should not count as winning the lottery if your pick moves down. The A's have moved down. Last 2 years, they had as good odds. The top three the three worst teams have the same odds for the number one pick. They have the best odds. The A's were as good as odds as anybody picking one. They moved to six in that five-player, that five elite player draft last year. That's irreparable harm to the franchise right there. This year, A's had as good a chance as anybody to pick number one. They moved down, I think, to four, right? I think to four. So that shouldn't be winning the lottery. They didn't win anything. They lost, but they won a lottery pick. And similarly, the White Sox, same thing. They were supposed to, I believe, pick fourth if we were just picking off a record, right? But they moved down to fifth. But hey, they won the lottery. So now they can't, like, so that they need to change that part of the rule. Like if you want to draft a lottery, change that part of the rule. Anyway, the good news is we won't think about how it's going to suck next year when they pick 11th as opposed to like second or third or whatever. You know, for this year's draft, you're right, James. They are going to get a good player. They are enough, like, really good college bats and college arms that they'll get a good player. Like, I think right now, like, the number one pick would either be Charlie Condon at Georgia. I don't think the bat exceeded expectations. Like, he's having a ridiculous year with the bat. I think what he's done that's helped himself even a little bit more, and we had him ranked fourth, so it wasn't like he was low, is he's proven he's not just a first baseman. Everybody was telling me in the fall he's more athletic than people give him credit for. He played first base last year. He's played some third base. He's played left field. He's played center field. I do watch my Georgia baseball, at least the Twitter feed, pretty religiously while I was running around spring training. And he's made highlight plays at all three positions. Now, I'm not saying he's a big league third baseman. I'm not saying he's a big league center fielder. But I think at worst, he's a corner outfielder. So he's not a first base only. And he's having another great year with the bat. You have him. You have Travis Bazzana from Oregon, who is having an unbelievable year as well. Australian kid. He's a second baseman. I don't think he can move over to short, but he's a second baseman. Really advanced bat. He's that prototype offensive second baseman. So you have those two guys in the mix. You have, like, he'll get back in the mix. But, like, J.J. Weatherholt, who we ranked number one coming into the year, who led, if I remember correctly, NCAA Division I in hitting last year, and he's athletic, and they were moving him from second to short. Pulled a hamstring the first week in the season, hasn't played since, at least hadn't maybe played last night. But I think he'd still be in that top five mix. He'll play before the season's over. Those are three guys. You have Chase Burns from Wake Forest, who has improved his fastball shape and command and still has a wipeout slider. And he's going out and just killing hitters every week. I think he struck out 13 in six or seven innings last night. And then you have Hagen Smith, lefty from Arkansas, who had a game where he struck out 17 in six innings on like 78 pitches, which is like how's it even possible? Like, and he has taken a step up this year. Like, he was much like Chase Burns. He was where everybody thought, great arm, could go really high in the draft, but we got to see more consistency, more strikes, and so far, so good. So, like, right there, I just rattled off five guys. Any of those guys would be a good get at five. You have the two-way guy at Florida, Jack Caglianone. You have Nick Kurtz at Wake, who was probably my favorite player coming into the year, and he's been a little banged up and hasn't had the good year. Seaver King at Wake. He's super athletic. He can play all over the diamond. He's a well above average runner with sneaky, probably at least average power. They're going to have all kinds of good options. This is not going to be, and I'm not slighting Jacob Gonzalez, but it's not going to be like last year where it's like, oh man, like we just missed out on Matt Shaw or we just missed out on Kyle Teal. They went right ahead of us. Like, I just rattled off six or seven guys. I think all would be good top five picks. So they should get, They should get a really good player, but I don't think it's going to be Gordon Beckham coming to Chicago again. I don't think we're going to see Charlie Condon in on the South Side, barring something dramatic happening in the second half of the season.
Well, something me and Ian have talked about is just like in the pre-draft process, you hear about all these teams that would be unlikely to take pitching up really high just because they prefer position players, whatever. The White Sox are not one of those teams. So I feel like if either of those two pitchers, you know, that I could totally see them just going. They'll take the best guy. But I mean, they're not going to be afraid to take pitching.
If they think Chase Burns is better than J.J. Weatherholt, they aren't going to say, well, we got to take J.J. Weatherholt because he's a hitter. I agree 100%. Well, let me ask you guys, who do you want? Like, drafts today. Who's like, I'm going to, the only two guys I'm going to totally cross off because pitchers are Charlie Condon and Travis Bezina. Like, I'm going to say there's no way they're getting to five right now. Who's your best case scenario? Who do you want at five?
I would want Hagen Smith probably.
Over Chase Burns?
Either one, but I'd take the lefty. Yeah.
Yep. How about you, Ian? Who do you want?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I would lean as well. I really like Chase Burns a lot, but just the fact that we've had such a starvation of left-handed pitching. We had 11 left-handed starts last year. 11.
So, you got Garrett Crochet now. You got Garrett Crochet. So,
I mean, hopefully we hit more than 11 this year. Yeah. But, I mean, we need to see more of that, you know?
Jim, how tough is it? We've been laughing about Connor Griffin just because he's tooled up and like, look, he looks awesome, right? But
I should have mentioned
like,
him.
And we laugh at the stolen base numbers and whatever. Like, how much do you have to consider just the fact that he's playing high school baseball in Mississippi?
Yeah, you do have to consider that. And I should have mentioned him as being in that mix because I think he's got the best tools in this draft. And like Mississippi high school competition is not real strong. Like I know for years, the most successful player to sign out of a Mississippi high school in the big leagues was Charlie Hayes, who had a good career. But there's all these guys who were high picks as Mississippi high school players who didn't really pan out as hoped. Now, some of those guys went to college and became good players. But like the competition, it's like Mississippi private school competition. It's just not that strong. So like, I went and looked at his numbers on Max Preps the other day, and it was like, I don't know, like 43 steals in like 11 games. I might even be selling him short. Like, and he's hitting like, I don't know, 680. Like his numbers are ridiculous. Like, you couldn't even put up numbers like that. You could create a guy with all 99s and MLB The Show, and you couldn't put up numbers like that in MLB The Show. Like it's crazy. But he's a good, you know, and I would not rule him out for the White Sox because Mike Shirley – and his staff, they're not afraid to take high school. Same thing. Like, you have teams that are like, high school players, risk.
Yeah.
Like, they took Colson Montgomery. The two best prospects are high school first-round picks. And I'll admit, I didn't see Noah Schultz coming at all. I didn't see that pick at all. I thought he was going to Vanderbilt, honestly. Like, I was totally shocked. I know he pitched in the prospect league. But I don't think they'd rule him out. And, like, he, you know, he didn't have a great showcase circuit last summer because he had a shoulder injury and it affected his swing a little bit. But like Walker Jenkins, who I was talking about, who the Twins took at number five last year, he wasn't fully healthy on the showcase circuit the year before either. And like people like Connor Griffin looks great. So I think people want to see him. Like, you can't really look at the performance because it doesn't matter. But people just want to say like, okay, I'd like to see him swing the bat a little better than he did last summer. And he is. So like, I think he's another guy who's going to be in that top five mix. Like his tool, like, if you gave him an average hit, like all the other tools are 60, 65, 70. And I think, not that you're basing it off of his batting average against Mississippi high school pitchers, like he'd probably be a 55 hitter right now. Like, and you're talking unbelievable tools. So like he'd be another, which is good. Like I said, the White Sox right now, I mean, I could come up with seven or eight guys like we just did off the top of our head who would be like nice fits at five. So it's not going to be we're in a bind where they're picking ninth and there's eight guys you want. And then they all are gone. You're like, okay, now who are the White Sox going to pick?
Yeah, Warren Hughes might be busy again. So
yeah, he might get another player this year.
Well, he got four of the first five last year and six of the top 10, I think. So
yeah. Well, I mean, I'm an SEC homer, but like it is the best conference in college baseball. And like the nice thing is like you can do a lot of one-stop shopping. Like if you go watch Hagen Smith or Chase Burns or whoever pitch on a given weekend, you're probably scouting all kinds of guys who are worth drafting, if not the first round, second, third, fourth, fifth round. So Yeah, no, it'd be good to have those SEC schools in your area. You're probably going to get some players.
You good, James?
All good, sir. Thanks for joining us, Jim. We really appreciate it.
No, that was a lot of fun. I mean, you guys always ask good questions, and I do think the arrow is pointing up. Like, I mean, you guys probably say, like, anytime I do a show and say that, White Sox fan, like, and then, like, when you guys let me know that this is live, and I'll tweet it out, and I'll be like, White Sox have had a lot of depth. All my comments will be like, I don't care about prospects. How will that work last time? But, and like, the funny thing is, you can actually make the counter argument. They went to the playoffs for, like, we all expected more. They went to the playoffs in back-to-back years, which they literally had never done ever. So while it didn't pay off in championships, like, we weren't lying when we talked about all this talent they had coming. They just – I didn't make them hire Tony La Russa and, like, kind of throw a wrench into everything. So, but, yeah, it's like that 90% of, like, what I hear is we don't – like, even after the Cease trade, and I was like, oh, I like this. You know, they got three interesting guys here. All the comments are like, oh, like, I don't want to hear about prospects. So, like, I think White Sox fans are just very bitter right now.
Yeah. We got it after the Jake Berger when Jake Eater went out and had a bad start in his first start. And then we literally just did it again with Thorpe as he gave up the most runs he's ever given up in his first start. So, you know, it's just, you know, nope. All the fans are jaded.
I like the Missouri State program. A lot of respect for Jake Berger, like, to a kid, like, to come back from what he came back from. But, like, they 100% traded the guy at peak value. And, like, he had a sub 300 on base percentage. He's not a good third baseman. Like, he's like a one-tool guy. And, again, credit to him for fighting back. But, like, there's no way Jake Berger was going to be a factor on the next good White Sox team. Even if they kept him, he would have been arbitration eligible. And, like, I think the upside of him is that, like, maybe it's a 310 on base percentage with 30 homers a year and bad defense. Like, you could find guys like that. And, like, we'll see on Eater, like, his year at Birmingham was really odd, and he didn't look great in the fall league. Like, I'm going to just chalk it up to things were odd. Switching organizations, coming after Tommy John, broken foot. Like, well, let's see how he is this year. But, like, it was weird, but, like, I would make that trade every day, and every day of the year I would make that trade. Like I'm selling – you're selling low on Jake Eater, and I'm selling high on Jake Berger because you're trying to make the playoffs. Like, okay. Like I thought, like, whoever we credit which trade to, like, the end of the days of Rick and Kenny, they did a good job of getting teams to overpay. Like, I don't know how good Kai Bush really is. And I like Caro. I'm probably a little lower on him than some. For what they gave up, I'd make that trade all day. And even the Dodgers, like, when, okay, I can't remember the chronology, but, like, they didn't get Eduardo Rodriguez. You want to give me some guys for Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly? I'll take Nick DeStrini. That guy's got a great arm. Jordan Leisure. I mean, you guys see, like, Jordan, I mean, they're not a contender, but Jordan Leisure might be the closer. Like, the guy throws, like, 100 with, like, good metrics and, like, a plus slider when he's on. You want to give me that for Lance Lynn? Okay. Like, Lance Lynn's never going to be on a White Sox playoff team. So I just thought they did a good job. But, like, and I said that, and the White Sox fans killed me. Ah, like, we love Lucas Giolito. Okay. Like what's Lucas Giolito now? Now he's, you know, going to have Tommy John surgery. Who knows when he's going to pitch again?
Yeah, and yeah. Reynaldo's in Atlanta. Well, we appreciate everything, all the information and everything. Just awesome having you on, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no, it's great. You guys do a great job. I enjoy it.
Do you want to promote anything on the way out here?
I mean, just our, you know, the site, MLB Pipeline. I mean, we're going to start diving in draft coverage soon. We've been All our top 30s are new. Those went up at the beginning of the month. We've been doing spring training reports. Those are just about done. We'll have all kinds of opening day stuff. And like I tell everybody, I think one of the great things about our site is it's all free. Like, and I am not knocking the paywall model. I realize, you know, people have to make money too. But like all our reports, all our videos, all our analysis, it's all free to everybody. And so check that out at MLBpipeline.com.
Awesome. Really appreciate it.